This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm really liking that Cardassian fashion you're sporting today.
Well, thanks, Chris. Garrick made it up special. I decided I'd try for the open neck, and I've got to say, it's very airy.
I can tell. It looks a little bit loose, though. I think you need to go to the gym. You need to bulk up a little bit if you're going to wear Cardassian tops.
Yeah. I really do think it might just be that I'm not cut out for the scoop neck.
Maybe so. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about Cardassians a bit, but we're actually going to talk about mixing cultures, just as Matthew is wearing Cardassian fashion, even though he's a human. We're going to talk about mixing Bajoran and Cardassian cultures and discuss Tora Zial, the daughter of Gul Dukat, who we first met in the episode Indiscretion. And Zial, like so many characters on DS9, these extras became a very important part of the show, even though she only appeared in 9 episodes. And she was played by 3 different actresses, Saya Batten, Tracy Middendorf, and Melanie Smith. And Matthew, when I think of Zial, really, Melanie Smith is the character that I think of.
I'm with you, Chris. I think that for me, anytime anybody mentions her name, that's kind of what comes into my mind. Even though I feel like I really did enjoy the performance that Tracy gave in her episode for the cause. I thought that she was really good. But obviously, where they wanted to bring the character, I think they finally realized that they needed somebody who could portray just a little bit older to really kind of make where they were going with the character work. And in some ways it makes sense. You know, how fast did Sirach Lofton grow, you know, during the series? I mean, I feel like in one season he shot up probably like 4 inches. So it makes sense when you're dealing with a character, one that you haven't seen for a while, and that she would change. Yeah, especially as she's in her formative years of growing up.
So. Right. So when Zial dies, she's 21 years old.
Yeah, and she's very young.
That's in the 6th season, and she's introduced in the 4th season. So if we just take that time as being linear, that would mean she was 18, 19 mm-hmm. when she first came to the station with Kira. And so that makes sense. But like you mentioned, and Ronald D. Moore said this, they did cast her a bit older for season five, when they brought on Melanie Smith, because of this romance with Garrick that was developing. It, you know, the age difference is something people are sensitive about. We've seen that in other Star Trek as well, especially on TNG, when you have a woman playing opposite Patrick Stewart. You know, you don't want that age difference to be too wide.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And, there is, I don't think it's completely outrageous to say, you know, somebody who's 19, 20 and can fall for somebody who's Garrick's age, who's probably in his, you know, later 30s. So it's not completely crazy. And it's Star Trek, they're alien races. It's a little bit different. You know, we need to stop putting all of our humanness on them, because all these races, you know, age differently. Their life cycles are different than ours, and their you know, what they think of as normal is different as well. Yeah. But it was I liked that they went finally with Melanie Smith and where they went with the character. I think she just fit so well, and I think she made the character somebody that I really gravitated towards in the end. Like, I really liked the character because of what they were doing with her, and I think her portrayal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Zial. So Dukat is overseeing the occupation of Bajor, and in a move that I think is probably not uncommon in that situation, he meets a Bajoran woman and allegedly falls in love with her, has a child with her, but as the occupation is drawing to a close, he knows that this is not going to work out. He cannot take Naprim and Zial back to Cardassia. So he sends them off to live on this neutral planet. Their ship comes under attack by Breen, and Naprim is killed. Zial is taken along with some other Bajorans to the planet and has to work as slave labor, basically, for the Breen. When it's discovered what happened to the ship, Kira decides to go look for that ship and other Bajorans, and Dukat joins her to go seek out his daughter. And, of course, he has the plan to kill his daughter if he finds her, to cover up the secret Bajoran family that he had. But also, I know that you feel that a lot of the reason for his plan, and also the reason why he doesn't kill her, is that he wants to get closer to Kira.
I do really see Dukat's dealings with Zial through the lens of kind of how he deals with Kira and this relationship that he really desires with her. I mean, and let's just think about this real quickly. How creepy is it that he has had a relationship with her mother and now has this disturbing fascination with Kira? And all throughout the series, you can tell that Dukat wants not only Bajoran, you know, praise and love and admiration, but he wants that from Kira. There's this sick kind of desire for him to have it from her. And I really see it play out in this episode specifically because, you know, obviously if Kira had not been there, Zial would not be a character on this show. And it was really the fact that Kira is there on that planet and would know what Dukat had done. Dukat really is between a rock and a hard place. He can't kill Zial because Kira will know. And he knows if he brings her back, well, he's, you know, damned at home, you know, with his wife, with the Tapa Council, all of these things. So, I mean, he's damned if he does and he damns if he doesn't. So there is no good choice for him. So he's obviously not going to kill his daughter and have, you know, Kira be aware of that. And his only choice is to bring his daughter home. And I really think, too, one of his main motivations, I feel like there's certain motivations that go behind his wanting to win over Kira. And it's not just so that they could be some sort of romantic relationship, but I feel like he feels that if I can win over Kira, I could win over the rest of the Bajoran people. And so by winning her over somehow, he will finally realize his goal of having the Bajoran people love him, you know, which is really what he's been after, to be seen as kind of a savior character for them. So, yeah, it doesn't all come down to that, but obviously without, you know, Kira being there, Zial would never have been a character on the show. In fact, we might even have this as a story at all.
Yeah. But when he sees his daughter and he sees the mix of her Bajoran face and her Cardassian face, you think something goes off in him at that moment that, hey, I can use this combination to finally make the Bajoran people accept me?
Oh, yeah. I do think that that's one of his motivations. And it does stem beyond Kira, obviously. I think that there is, in Dukat's mind, the idea that if I treat her well, it will go a long way for the Bajoran people as seeing me as something other than, you know, just a labor camp runner. It would, I mean, just historically, think about that with if, you know, a labor camp runner in our own history had a love child with one of the people in the camps. And I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. And putting it in those perspectives, I think it just shows just really how crazily twisted Dukat is. Like, there's always an angle going on with this guy. There's never anything altruistic about Dukat. It's always looking for the angle and how it's going to benefit him in the eyes of others.
So you don't think that there's anything there when Zial tells him that I'd rather die than be apart from you? He looks, he sees the face of his child. He knows that this person is of me. This person is half me, and also sees her mother in her. There's no emotional movement there for you that he decided not to kill her because once he actually looked his daughter in the eyes, it's something that he really couldn't do.
I think that there is some kind of movement. I mean, there's something there. I don't know if it's, I mean, it's obviously not true love for his child. I think it's a very selfish love for the what she is giving him in return at this moment. I never see anything truly admirable about anything that he does. Because obviously, again, this episode, I feel like that specifically episode makes it very clear. If Kira had not been there, he would never have thought twice about killing his daughter. He would have just gone there, he would have done it, and he would have left.
Well, see, that's the part where I'm not so sure. I still feel that when he saw her, that was a turning point for him. He, maybe up until that moment, absolutely, he was going to go through with it. But then when he saw her, when she said that to him, he couldn't do it. Because if I fast forward to Sacrifice of Angels, when we lose Zial, and Dukat has the breakdown, I feel like there's something there that's connected, that if she were nothing more than a tool in his arsenal and his mission to make the Bajoran people love him, then he wouldn't have had the breakdown that he had when she was killed.
And I guess I probably see that breakdown differently. I don't think it has as much to do with Zial as that's the last straw that makes his psyche snap.
Oh, well, I agree with you on that. Yeah,
But I don't really see it so much as that it's... And maybe we could get lots of hate mail for this, so send it to Matthew Rushing. Blah, 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 blah.
Do like Monty Python, send it to Matthew Rushing, care of British Airways.
Yes, exactly. And if you disagree with me, that's where we'd love to hear from you. But I really... In that episode specifically, too, I don't see that it's so much Zial, it's just really the last straw. I really don't. I think that there is something in him that has some sort of twisted care about his daughter, but it's really just the ending of the not-so-good, terrible, horrible, bad day that Dukat is having.
Yeah.
And because it's the end of... I mean... If you think about the character, especially in that episode, his desire is he thinks he's at his moment of triumph. You know, it's basically Admiral Tarkin. Would you like me to get your ship ready, sir? In a moment of triumph? And, you know, so that's exactly what Dukat says, you know, in no uncertain terms. This is our moment of triumph. We're about to get the wormhole back. We're all these things. Everything's falling together, and then everything falls apart. Yeah. And it's too much for him to handle. And he's overloaded once. Yeah, so I'm not saying there's nothing there.
Yeah.
What I am saying is it's just, it's always tainted. There's nothing pure about his feelings for Zeal, I don't think. That's just my feeling. I never see there being nothing, true familial love between them.
Yeah, nothing pure, I would say, but I don't know. I think there's more to it than that. Well, we were going to talk about the breaking point at the end. We talked about it a little bit here. Maybe we'll revisit it, because before we get too far away from this topic of it being Dukat's little secret, when he takes her back to Cardassia, he knows that there are going to be serious repercussions. And maybe he thinks that he's above it all and that the Detapa Council can't do anything to him. But he takes her back there and he gets demoted. He loses his wife and his family on Cardassia. They leave. It really, everything that he has built for himself over the years kind of crumbles when he comes back to Cardassia with this daughter that no one knew he had, who's half Bajoran. And it's just a terribly high price to pay just to get closer to Kira and the Bajoran people.
But at the same time, there is this strange thing that's happening with his character where he is being seen in a different light by people around him. Not just Bajorans or Kira, but I mean, there are other people that are starting to see him in a way that they might not have before. So I think that this is something where Dukat is always working in an angle to figure out where he can get in. And throughout that season, he is finding a way to be seen better by people, even like Sisko, or they're kind of starting to kind of maybe have a slight begrudging respect for him. And then, of course, he blows it all out of the water when, you know, they join the Dominion and screws everybody over.
But of course, if your theory is correct, that would also just be part of his plan to set up the pieces.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And he doesn't really care, like inside of people. Mm-hmm. Think this way about him, but he wants at least superficially to be that way so that they will open up to him, trust him a bit more, and he can execute his overall plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's what makes Dukat a scheming, crazy man. You know, he's so good at all of these things and finding a way. He's like the snake in the grass. He's just able to find a way to make all these things work somehow for himself.
And I like that Cardassians are kind of reptilian, so snake in the grass, but that works really well.
Yeah. Well, and I think the craziest part about it is that even after his daughter's death and everything, he uses that death and everything, I think, to then, you know, get in with the Paul Wraith cult. I mean, he just is insidious in his dealings with people, and the way that he uses even those supposed failures to be his benefit. So it is scary, crazy. I mean, he's just one of, and this is what makes, I think, him a great villain, is you just don't know what this guy is going to do or how he's going to use his situation to further himself. It's insane. It's amazing. I think it's what makes him one of the best villains that I've seen. You know, when I think of great villains we're talking like the Emperor of Star Wars style type of villain, where he's just using everything possible to get his scheme through. You know, and I think it's great. It's what makes him so good.
Except if you're going off of the Star Wars films, then Dukat is a much richer character because we get so much more scheming from him. We know so much more about him.
Well, yes, yeah, that is very absolutely. Much true. Yeah. So.
Well, okay, so I could talk about this particular topic for quite a while, and we'll probably come back to it a little bit at the end. But what happens ultimately is that Zeal goes to live on the station, and so she goes back there with Kira. Kira becomes kind of like her guardian, and you know, really watches after her, helps her adjust to life there on the station. And so she becomes like a big sister to Zeal. But beyond the importance of her role in Zeal's life, I feel that both if we want to put ourselves in universe, the role of Zial in Kira's life, and also in the writing, the purpose of Zial being in the story is to help develop Kira's journey to come to terms with what happened in her past, with the Cardassian occupation of Bajor, and accepting the past and looking to the future and learning that that relationship has to change between Bajorans and Cardassians if there's going to be a positive future, even just for the Bajoran people.
I really like the way that they use this character. I love that Zial is that kind of bridge for Kira. You know, she's half Bajoran and she's half Cardassian. And I think it's that Bajoran half that really reaches out to Kira and makes her see beyond the Cardassian and be able to see something that she's a being that deserves respect and love and to be treated on her own terms for who she is, not because of, well, I mean, gosh, the color of her skin, and to allow that kind of racism to fall away from Kira. And I think it's one of the most important steps for Kira to then be able to go towards, and when she goes to Cardassia to help with the rebellion against the Dominion. I think it's one of the things that it's her relationship with Zial that has helped the place those footsteps closer.
Yeah, because I can't see her doing that if Zial had not been on the station all that time.
Oh yeah, not at all. Yeah, I'm right there with you, and I think that's what makes Zial such a great story arc for so many people, and it makes her a fascinating character as well. Because like when we talked about Jen Zia, we talked about how she kind of affects change in everyone around her. Zial is one of those beautiful characters who is doing that as well. Everybody who is around her loves her. She is a light in so many people's lives. And I think it's a great testament to the way in which somebody who's had such terrible things happen to them doesn't necessarily have to turn out to be a terrible person. You know, Zial is a wonderful character for that, because there are people like that who have just had horrible experiences in their lives and yet at the same time turn out to be somebody who is the loveliest, nicest, kindest person that you've ever met. And we all wonder, how does that happen? And yet, you know, with her, it does. And I think it's really, really beautiful. So that's one of the things that I really like about her character and what they did with her on Deep Space Nine, and kind of why I would have loved to have seen just a little bit more of her, because I think it was just a really fascinating, well-written, small part character that has such a huge impact on everything around her.
Yeah, only 9 episodes. But yet it feels like she was there for a lot more.
Strangely enough, she mirrors Garak in that way, where we feel like Garak is in a bunch of episodes, and yet he's really not.
Although Garak is in, what, maybe 31, I think. So a lot more than Zial, but nevertheless, a very small number.
Very true.
Compared to all the DS9 episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this character of Zial is important, too, because it's easy to, like, in the situation here where you've had a conquering force, you've had the Cardassians conquering and occupying Bajor, your hatred becomes directed at the Cardassians in this case. But say here on Earth, maybe you have a hatred towards a specific race or a specific nationality because of something that's happened historically, even though you never personally experienced it. Now, in Kira's case, obviously she did experience it, but in the real world, it often happens where nothing's really ever happened bad to you because of it, but you don't see the person. You see it's just a label. And when you have someone who is a mix of the two cultures and you can get to know them, you realize that there's a separation between that and the actual person. And so here on the station, it helps Kira, of course, even people like O'Brien who fought the Cardassians, to see that, you know, this spoon shape on the forehead or these ridges around the eyes are all superficial. It doesn't represent that person. It doesn't. That's not what all Cardassians are. And I think that bringing her to the station and having her live amongst everyone on the station was a really great move by the writers, very much in keeping with the ideals of Star Trek, to put someone tangible there to help the other characters kind of bridge that gap and get past the racism, like you mentioned.
Well, and it's a neat thing because I think Deep Space Nine does this really well, and especially how important it was, you know, with Avery being an African-American and portraying this strong character and this wonderful father. All of these things work together on this show to show that it's not what's on the outside that makes the person. It's what's on the inside right. that makes them. And you can never judge a person until you know that person and what's on the inside. And the only way to do that is to get to know them. And I really, really like that. The message of Deep Space Nine, I think one of the main messages is that it is about what's on the inside. And especially when you think about even like a character like Dax, it's about what's on the inside. Well, she has a symbiont. She's a bunch of things on the inside, and you can't really get to know that. And you wouldn't know that just by looking on the outside. You would just see a beautiful girl. You wouldn't see everything that's going on the inside, you know? So you can't, as funny as it is, Chris, you cannot judge a book by its cover.
That's another show, Matthew. Literary tricks.
But I think it really is the truth when we talk about a character like Zial and what she does to bring these two cultures together that have been locking horns for such a long time.
Speaking of getting to know someone on the inside, she forms this romantic relationship. It never really goes too far, but it's there. It's starting to blossom with Garrick. And Garrick is someone who's very much a mystery on the inside, right? We spend the whole series trying to figure out who Garrick really is. Now, he's the only Cardassian on the station, and maybe it would be easy to think that she's attracted to him simply because he's a Cardassian, but she's half Cardassian. I don't think that that's necessarily all that's going on there. What do you think Zial saw in Garrick? What was that attraction for her?
I think, you know, Zial is one of those people who can always see the good in people, even when they can't see it themselves. And, you know, with Garrick, there is a good in him. You know, he is a product very much of his upbringing and all that had been drilled into him by an Aubryn Tane, the distrust, the discord, the lack of true caring in so many ways. I think she opens up to him a whole new part, a whole new world that he just didn't really understand. He knew it existed, but it didn't mean anything for him. And Zial sees that there's more than meets the eye with Garrick. He's not a transformer, but she helps transform him. Yeah. There is nothing like being the black sheep among a bunch of people and having one person believe in you in a way that you don't really feel like you deserve. And I think that's what Garrick gets from Zial. He gets unconditional acceptance and love when he has done nothing to deserve it from her. And that kind of grace being given is transformative. It's very spiritual in a lot of ways. And so I think it is what has a major impact in bringing him forward as a character from somebody who is kind of, you know, very amoral character to being somebody who becomes someone who has something to believe in, to fight for.
And you can really see that by the end.
You know, she's really instilled in him this idea that there is a need for a new Cardassia. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the other thing she does for him. She brings him face to face with the ugliness of Cardassia and the beauty in it all at the same time. And the realization that it needs to move forward, it needs to change, or else it will always be.
Well, at that point, I mean, it's maybe Cardassia is going to die if it doesn't change.
Yes, so, exactly. There you go.
It's really interesting. Like we said at the beginning of the show, without Zial's influence, we can't see Kira going to Cardassia and fighting to liberate Cardassia at the end of the series. Like you said, Garrick also, without Zial's influence, I don't think Garrick would have been there fighting either.
No, I don't think so. And again, fighting side by side with her murderer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there is just an amazing amount that she has to do with in this show with the characters and where it goes towards the end. Yeah. 9 appearances, and her appearances, every single one of them, is transformative to somebody around her and motivates a character as they move forward. That's a great track record on a television show for a guest appearance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Garrick seems very puzzled much of the time about why she would be in love with him. But she waits. I mean, Garrick is lost in the Gamma Quadrant. Zial's going to wait for him. And he realizes that at the end, though, there's the moment. It's in Sacrifice of Angels, I think, right? Where she hugs him in. But you can see Garrick's face that there is that connection and that he would miss her.
I think it's the thing that, she continually just loves him unconditionally. You know, she doesn't expect it to be returned right away, but she's kind of slowly chipped away at the facade that Garrick puts up for everyone else. And yes, it has gotten to that point where there is, she's had an effect. She's left a lasting impression on him. She has irreparably changed who Garrick is forever because of the way that she's loved him. And so much of their love is so pure and beautiful. You know, there's nothing overly sexualized about it or anything creepy. Yeah. You know, and that's what I think the writers do fantastically here with them, is that it's a pure love that they have. And I think Garrick really finds that out in the end. And it's what I think does really help to spur him on to become the man that he becomes by the end of the series. It's the true power of grace-filled love in somebody's life.
I thought you were going to break out into some Huey Lewis and the News there for a minute.
No, I decided that I'd try not to sing this episode.
Yeah, because there have been quite a few opportunities so far. You have controlled yourself very well.
Thank you.
Well, we talked a little bit earlier also about bridging cultures. And now here's a point where the line blurs for me between the TV series and the books when the story of DS9 continues. Because on the series, we see her art. And that is one of those moments where Dukat and Kira actually come together in agreement that they both are impressed with her art and the way that she's expressing herself. And her art is selected for exhibition on Cardassia by the Cardassian Institute, something that obviously her father is very proud of. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matthew. The storyline in which Zial's artwork is vandalized on the station, that comes from the literary universe, not the series?
They were displayed on the promenade. In fact, they were displayed in the former tailor shop.
Oh, that's right.
That
Elam
Garrick had. And they were vandalized. So those take place in the Mission Gamma novels that we had just finished recently covering. It is very interesting that her impact, and it's one of those things I remember reading some of the scenes about her artwork and being very moved by the fact that they were bringing that back and that her impact was still being felt throughout the novelverse there, and really, really appreciated that because you could see the way that her art was doing what she wanted to. The idea was that it would bring people together. It would bring the Bajorans and the Cardassians together, and I really, really appreciate it that that happened.
That's why I thought of it, because initially I was thinking that it happened on the series, and then I realized, no, wait, no, that happens later. It's not on the series, and her art does not have as much of a role on television as it does in my mind, because the artwork, it can serve its purpose to bring the cultures together. So the average Bajoran and the average Cardassian can look at that and appreciate it as art, then can realize that it has been painted by a woman who comes from both cultures. And it can be a healing process for the two cultures, but it can also be decisive, which is one reason I thought about the fact that it was vandalized, because you're going to have people who, and it could be on either side, Bajoran or Cardassian, who realize that this is having the effect of bringing us together. We don't want to be together. You know, those are the hated Cardassians, or those are the hated Bajorans. And so Zial can become a flashpoint there. She could, on the one hand, help to repair the damage done by the occupation, but she could also be seen as a catalyst for continuing the conflict.
Yeah, that's a crazy thought. I hadn't actually thought about the idea of her being something that might further the divide because of the way that she could be perceived on the fringes, yeah. You know, the people on the outskirts of this whole...
Well, it's kind of like in Enterprise, it's sort of like the baby that was created from Trip and T'Pol's DNA to try to fuel the xenophobic feelings on Earth at the time.
It's very, very good. Great correlation there. And again, another, I mean, just like Zial, another tragic story, you know, for the characters involved. I mean, I think if the storyline of Enterprise had continued past Terra Prime and Demons, the fallout for Trip and T'Pol would have been pretty horrendous. Yeah. Just the way that it impacted their lives and how difficult it would have been on them, and probably would have brought them together, I think. But that's a whole other show, Chris. Yeah. But the same thing happens with Zial because of the way that she leaves the series, the way that she goes out, that breaking point that we talked about earlier. It really it has a huge impact because obviously it is the point at which Dukat completely loses it. Like it everything is gone.
So let's finish off with that. Now, up front, we started talking about that breaking point a little bit, and you feel that it was just, there was too much happening. Dukat was too close to victory. Everything fell apart, and he just basically had a nervous breakdown. Whereas I feel that there was something there for him and Zial. She came to him, she admitted that she had been working together with Rom and Lita and everyone to take down the minefield. She couldn't believe that Dukat was not going to pardon Rom. And yet, even then, Dukat, there was so much going on, maybe he couldn't really formulate how he was going to process that revelation. But certainly his first impulse wasn't to kill her as a traitor. It was Damar who executed her as a traitor right in front of Dukat's eyes. And I still feel that it's Dukat seeing the death of his daughter that really makes everything snap. If she had, even with Revelation, if she had not been killed, I think he may have continued on. He would have left the station. I just still think that there is, like you said up front, maybe not a true pure love, but it's your child. There's something when you have children, there's something that there's a bond that no matter what, there is sort of an innate love there. I just can't see that not existing for a character as complex as Dukat was up to that point in the series.
Right, and I don't really think we honestly disagree that much, because it's the last thing that's taken away from him that day, and it's the last thing he, Because in that whole scene, he's pleading with his daughter. He's saying, I don't care. Just come back with me. Because she's the very last thing in his life he has to hold on to.
True.
There's nothing else left at that point. And so her murder is the straw that breaks his back. Because he has nothing left to hold on to once she's taken away. And I am sure that it has a lot to do with the fact that somewhere inside of him, he has some kind of feelings for his daughter that go beyond his selfishness. But everything together, that's just the last. I mean, everything at that point is taken away. And because of the type of character that Ducat is, it's too much. It's almost as if he's like Anakin in Star Wars, and you know Padme is taken away, and he snaps. Like he's all about possession of things and people around him, and so I think that's kind of how I see it. That there's that mental breakdown because everything that he has possessed that day, the victory, the daughter, everything has been taken away. Because you have to remember too, a part of her is taken away even before she dies, because she said, one, I betrayed you, and I can't go with you. So she kind of dies, I feel like, two deaths for him. One, in the daughter he thought he had, and two, the fact that his daughter just dies.
Good point. Yeah.
So it's like there's two deaths that happen for him in that scene. And I think that's probably, too, what helps that break happen for him, that total just mental collapse.
Yeah, very good point. So do you feel that it's the actual death of Zial that propels Ducat forward through the rest of the series? It really turns him into what I still feel, even though a lot of our listeners disagree with us and scream at us sometimes in email and in forums, Ducat becomes a two-dimensional evil villain at that point. Do you think it's the death of Zial, the impact that she had on him, and then he loses her? Or is she just one small facet? And as you just described, he lost everything and he snapped.
I would really fight against the idea that he becomes two-dimensional. And this is why. The more I've thought about it, I think that the loss of Zial and the loss of Deep Space Nine, the loss of his position and everything else, I think Ducat has spent all of his life dancing around everyone, trying to make everyone love him. And I think once he gets out of the Federation penitentiary that he was being held at, the mental institute, once he escapes with Sisko and that whole situation there, I don't see it as being just becoming two-dimensional. What I see it is that he's freaking tired of not getting what he wants. And he's finally at the point where he's allowed himself to not care what really other people think of him. He is just going to do whatever it takes to be who he wants to be and be in the position that he wants to be in. Damn what anybody else thinks.
I'm not sure if
I don't see that as necessarily being two-dimensional. I see that as just finally stopping trying to be seen as in a certain light in everyone's eyes and letting go of that. And I don't think that's a loss of dimensionality. I just think it's a part of his character.
I'm not sure that I think that he becomes two-dimensional by the time of Waltz, where he escapes with Sisko. But as we get to the end of the series, I feel that the writers really make him evil incarnate, because the story they're telling to the end is the final showdown of good and evil in the fire caves, and they pit Sisko and Ducat against each other, and he's not as complex a character as he is up to this point in the series. Over the course of the series, we see so many sides of him, and we see how he is playing all the angles, which you've talked about before, and it becomes very, very, very specific towards the end of the series that he's representing the side of evil.
Right. And I don't think, I don't think it's a loss of dimensions. I think it's a loss for him of playing games in the ways that he has been. It's a singular focus.
Yeah. Of course, he is still playing
and
that's
what it becomes.
It's just a singular focus. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's the main difference. But I see it as a more of a logical progression from where the character has been to where he finally ends up. That, and it makes sense. He is tired of not getting what he wants. And so he's found a way that he thinks that will get him what he wants, and he is going to use it, and he's going to do it. And at this point, he does not care anymore about anything else but that singular focus. And I think that's again, I don't see that as being a loss of dimensionality or, whether he's... a more rounded character. I feel like the character has gone from where he was to where he is now, and it makes really good sense the way they've written it. I think about it.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. And it is at the end of Waltz where he announces his singular focus that he's going to destroy all the Bajorans. Do you think there's any connection there in the loss of Zial, his last connection to the Bajorans? In terms of, she was half Bajoran, she was his daughter, that now he's just flipped.
Yeah, I think that he's lost the desire and the will to try and ever win Kira, because he knows that's never going to happen. And he's also lost his daughter, the one thing that was really kind of tying him to the Bajoran people in that way. And... now I think he can just do what he always wanted to do in the end, which was, if you're not going to love me, I will punish you.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Yeah, if they're not going to love me, I'm just going to destroy them all. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, or I'm going to destroy them with my love.
Right. All right. Well, let's wrap up our discussion here. Any final points on Zial?
I just think that this, again, is one of those characters of Deep Space Nine's... pantheon of characters that became something that maybe even the writers weren't expecting when they kind of first thought of this idea, and had such a great impact with such a small amount of episodes under their belt. 9 episodes to really trigger a lot of different things and a lot of different characters. And when it comes to being a great character, what more can you say than your existence in the story had a major influence on other characters? And that's great writing.
Yeah, I think when they created the character, it was probably more of, let's give Dukat a daughter who's half Bajoran and see where that story is going to go with Dukat. They probably, at that moment in time, did not expect that this character would influence Garrick and Kira and others on the station to the extent that she did. And so it's a great evolution that we had with this character. For those who want to catch the episodes, I can't remember if we said up front which of these episodes are the 9 that we're talking about, but we first meet Zial in Indiscretion in season 4, and that's Sia Batten playing Zial. Also Return to Grace. Then Tracy Mindendorf comes in for the Cause. And then in season 5, that's when Melanie Smith comes in Purgatory Shadow by Inferno's Light, really great two-parter. Call to Arms, Sons and Daughters in season 6, Favor the Bold, and then of course Sacrifice of Angels. So those are the episodes to watch if you want to watch the Zial arc throughout DS9. I'm just really glad that they had this character there. Living in Japan as I do, we have a lot of people here, like my own children, who are mixed race. Actually, in Japan, we call them hafu, which is half, but with Japanese pronunciation, hafu, and it's really changed, I think, the nature of the culture and the understanding between Japan, which is quite a xenophobic culture even today. But the understanding between Japanese and other cultures around the world, this sort of mixing of cultures, is really important. And I think that is something that, in America, you get that by definition because the country is made up of people from all around the world. But when you come to a culture that's not like that, and of course, in Star Trek, Bajor is a very pure culture, Cardassia is a very pure culture, introducing this Hafu into the story is really important. So, yeah, I really like having Zial on the show. Well, Matthew, I'm glad we got to do a show about one of the minor characters. We've worked long ago through all the major characters on the show, although we haven't done Dukat yet. Although I think if you take our Dukat discussions from various episodes, we probably could assemble like a four-hour show about just Dukat.
That is true. The funny thing is, I think it shows just how much he was a part of the show, that every time we talk about one character, we're really talking about Dukat a lot, because he has such interactions with so many different facets of this show.
But even though we've talked that much about Dukat, we are eventually going to do a dedicated show about Dukat. So just hang in there. We're postponing it for a specific reason, and we will eventually get to it. Well, Zial was a great discussion, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It's not an overstatement, and you had said in your introduction that without him and his hand guiding all of this, then it's unlikely that 2 would have been what it was, and if it had not been successful, then it probably would have meant the end of Star Trek at that point.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5!
The shuttlecraft. The orb.
Curzon is involved with the Khitomer Quartz. Spock is at Khitomer when those are being talked about, so you would think they would have run into each other.
They probably hung out in the bar together.
To the journey! One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now! The Ready Room.
The movie series would not have relaunched and become what it was if not for the amazing bounce of The Wrath of Khan. The Wrath of Khan was to Star Trek the same thing that The Best of Both Worlds was to Next Generation.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, I've always liked the... I like that episode for... I mean, it's one of the most derided of the original series episodes, but yet it has this place in my heart for some reason. I've always enjoyed watching it over. So I wanted to do something with those guys, the Scalbians.
The 602 Club. Like, I could kind of dismiss Droids in Distress and Fight or Flight and everything like that, and I was just kind of watching the background, but all of a sudden I started catching myself, like, stopping working and just focusing on watching. And so it just got better and better and better. And I think I was hooked by episode 4, Breaking Ranks. That's when I was like, okay, I like this show. This is good. Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what else we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. iTunes, Spreaker, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. You can go to the website and stream. You can download the MP3 file or grab the RSS link. Pop that into any third-party application you like. If you're in iTunes, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear what you think about the show, but also those ratings and reviews help us rise up in the search results, and that makes it easier for Star Trek fans to find the Orb as they're searching for podcasts. And speaking of reviews, Matthew, we have several new ones in that I wanted to share with everyone here on the show. This one comes to us from Professor James Robb, who says, you need to listen to this podcast. 5 stars. And he says, Deep Space Nine was always my favorite Star Trek, and I'm glad to hear a podcast finally giving it its due. What a wonderful podcast. I've been listening for the last 8 months, joined the Babel Conference, and recently gone back and started listening to the podcast from the beginning. Thanks for enriching my life, Trek FM. With 3 exclamation marks after that, Matthew.
Wow, that's awesome. I love hearing that kind of feedback. I'm so glad that, I'm so glad that people love the show enough to want to go back and listen through all, I guess by this show, 85 of them.
Yeah, that's a lot of listening for sure. So thank you so much, Professor James Robb, for that review. And another one here is from, okay, you're going to like this name. This is their iTunes name, Matthew. Odo could be this chair.
That's awesome.
That's great. So Odo could be this chair says, a must for Niner fans, gave us 5 stars, and said, I've listened to 10 podcasts, jumping around from the first to the latest and picking and choosing podcasts in the middle. This is not an episode at a time review podcast, but topics from throughout, picking and choosing individual threads from the fabric of DS9. The quality of this podcast is insanely high. The conversational style of the hosts, Chris and Matt, complement each other very well. Smart and well-studied, one religious, one not, but never combatant about it. This show is the DS9 podcast you were looking for conversation on your favorite episodes, characters, and stories with great insight. They love the show just like you do if you're reading this comment. Be prepared for an hour on average of great discussion about Star Trek DS9. Your crazy Uncle Gowron and the John McClane of DS9 will change how you refer to the characters forever. Keep up the great work, guys.
You know that you have a great listener, Chris, when they're actually quoting back things that you've said on the show. That's when we know we're having an impact on the fandom.
That's right. Now, your crazy Uncle Gowron, I know we've mentioned a number of times, but the John McClane of DS9, I think, comes from just one specific discussion, so that's great.
And for those of you who haven't heard that episode, it was O'Brien.
That's right. He is the John McClane of Deep Space Nine. Okay, one more review here from Emily Reeds. Emily says, great look into Deep Space Nine and left us 5 stars. If you are looking for a great DS9 podcast, you have come to the right place. Like the other series podcasts on Trek FM, which are also great, The Orb doesn't only do episode reviews. The topics on the show vary each week and are often fascinating discussions on some of the intense issues that DS9 covers. The hosts, Matt and Chris, have great, respectful discussions and often make me consider things in a new light. I am not sure if it is just the darker, more serious tone of DS9 itself, but The Orb is not quite as funny and lighthearted as some of the other shows on the network, but I think that works to its advantage, as the topics they cover seem to generate a lot of listener discussion. Listening to The Orb has me watching DS9 more often, which can only be a good thing.
You know, Emily, that is so true. It can only be a good thing if you're watching more Deep Space Nine. And I think you're right. You know, Deep Space Nine has a lot of times a very serious tone. And I think that Chris and I just want to reflect that with the show. And I love that we can help people see things in a way they might not have. As Obi-Wan said, it's true from a certain point of view. And I think when we look at Deep Space Nine, we really see that play out, that there are so many different ways that we can look at the situations in this show, and each of those facets really open up a whole new world of possibilities.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to talk about DS9 and be too like lighthearted and laughing like when we talk about TNG or TOS, but we have our laughs on the show here from time to time. And there, as we've talked about many times, Matthew, DS9 actually is very funny when they decide to do comedy. But overall, yeah, the tone of the show is a very serious one.
No, it can be hysterical, actually. And that's one of the things that I do really love about the show.
Definitely. So thanks, everyone, for those reviews. And for everyone else, please stop by and leave us a star rating and a written review so we can read them here on the show. And you can also help, as I said, other Star Trek fans find The Orb in iTunes. Now, Matthew, Professor James Robb there mentioned that he has joined the Babel Conference. Tell everyone what that is.
Well, the Babel Conference is our listeners-only discussion group here on Facebook, and it's a closed group that allows us to have great conversations. If you want to join the group, just ask to join. Either Chris or I will let you in. And one of the things I love most about it is just the respectful conversations that we have. Chris, we've had some of the best Star Trek conversations I've honestly ever seen online. And they always happen with the utmost of respect for people's views. But at the same time, they're lively discussions. They're fun. I mean, honestly, I find myself laughing a lot just at the things that we talk about online there on the Babel Comfort. So if you haven't joined, man, you definitely are missing out on some of the best Star Trek talk that can be had on the internet.
That's right. And in fact, in a recent thread, which could have gotten very heated online, it ended up with a Care Bear with the Trekafilm logo photoshopped onto its chest by Aaron Harvey. So that was great.
Nothing better than having a Care Bear show up in your discussion.
Right. Oh, gosh. I like when Larry popped into that thread. He's like, I can't believe I've missed this very interesting and funny and crazy thread of Star Trek discussion online. It usually doesn't work out that way. So come join us there. Anyway, type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it will come right up. Or on our website, you can click discussion on the menu bar. That will take you there as well. Just click join, and we'll let you right in. And we hope you'll join the conversation over there. Now, beyond Facebook, there are other ways for you to get in touch with us. You can send us an email by going to trek.fm/contact and using the form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That'll come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. We have our regular Facebook page, facebook.com/TrekFM. You can also go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM and send us a voicemail if you'd like to do that. And maybe we can play that here on the show. So many ways to get in touch with us, and we would love to hear from you. So let us know what you think about Z'all and anything else about Star Trek. Now, if you'd like to support the show and help us keep DS9 discussion and all Star Trek discussion coming to you every week and with all of our shows every day of the week, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. That's a way for you to support the network by setting an amount that you would like to contribute on a month-to-month basis. And we really need that support to produce the shows and distribute the shows. It costs quite a lot to operate the network and to do these podcasts. And we're listener-supported, so we hope that you will join all the many wonderful patrons that we have over there right now and help us keep the shows coming. And we'd also like to thank our associate producers here on The Orb, Norman Lau, Ruth Ward, Lisa Stevens, Will Wynn, and Kenneth Tripp. They help us keep the show coming to you every week. They're all patrons there on Patreon, and we really thank them for their support of The Orb. Now, Matthew, when you're not over with Garrick working on that collar, you know, trying to tighten it up a little bit so it fits your neck better, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. In fact, we just finished up Mission Gamma series, so check us out over there. Do the 602 Club, where just a more general geeky podcast. We don't talk about a lot of Trek there. Just pick a great topic each week. It's a little bit like the Ready Room, except we do it with geek topics such as, you know, Star Wars or Dragonheart or comics or any of those kind of things. Just a place for the Trek FM family to kick back and talk things that we don't normally get to talk about on our shows. And so that's really enjoyable. And then you can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to track down as many of Z'all's paintings to hang up there in your beautiful Japanese home, where can we find you?
They make great decor, Matthew. They really do.
They really do. And they kind of fit the, I feel like, the Japanese aesthetic. So.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah, maybe so. Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. You can also find me on Facebook. They're in the Babel Conference. And you can find me on my website at cbrianjones.com. I'm starting to write a few new things there. I took all my old stuff offline for a while, and I have some new pieces up there. So you can go and check out what I write about. And I'm probably going to start putting some of my Instagram photos up there too, Matthew, because those are getting popular. Just the other day, I was in the elevator at the Ritz-Carlton in Tokyo to do an interview and a photo shoot on the 47th floor. And so
Ooh, nice.
Obviously there I had to snap a photo. of the elevator on 47 for a little Star Trek connection. So those are places that you can find me. And then elsewhere on the network, you can find me on The Ready Room, where we rotate through all 5 live-action Star Trek series and also talk about a bit of news. And you can find me doing Hyper Channel, which is our short news show, which I do from time to time, sort of an irregular release right now. But if you want to hear me talk about Star Trek news for 10 or 15 minutes, then you can tune in there. Well, Matthew, it was great to do another Orb, and I hope everyone will hop in and let us know their thoughts on Z'all.
Most definitely, Chris. We want to thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.